Chapter 9. No one had wanted to go near the Haas home on the north side of Minneapolis since the murders. Kids rode past it slowly on their bikes during the day, morbidly fascinated with the place and the idea of something as evil as murder. They dared each other to go up to the windows and look inside, especially the basement windows. Every once in a while, some kid would take the challenge. More often, they all spooked and ran. No one wanted to go near the Haas home, which was why Wayne Haas and his son from his first marriage still lived in it. The for sale sign had been standing in the front yard for more than a year. No takers. The only people who looked out of the same morbid fascination as the children who sat on their bikes out in front on the street. No one wanted to buy a home where a woman and two children had been tortured and murdered, their bodies desecrated in sickening, unspeakable ways. If any place should have been haunted, it should have been that house. The evil that had lived inside it that terrible day surely must have permeated the place, the walls, the floors, the ceilings, the foundation, the same way smoke from a fire could permeate and never leave. Wayne Haas was not a man of means. He worked in a meatpacking plant, hanging carcasses and loading trucks. He made a decent living, but he couldn't afford to buy a different house without selling the one he had. And nobody wanted the house he had. Kovac and Liska pulled into the cracked concrete driveway, which led to a detached garage. Erratic lights flashed in the front window of the otherwise dark house, indicating someone inside was watching television. Still, the place had a weird, vacant quality to it. The yard was bad, weedy, and bald in spots. There once had been a big oak tree in the front, but the tornado that had come on that same fateful summer afternoon as the murders had torn it up by the roots, leaving the lawn naked and the house exposed. A photograph of the scene had taken up half the front page of the newspaper the next day. "I couldn't live in this house," Liska said. "I don't even want to go inside. I'd live in a garbage dumpster behind a fish market before I'd live here," Kovac said. He mostly didn't believe in superstitions, but even he drew the line at living in murder scenes. For one thing, in all his 20-plus years on the job, he had never gotten used to the smell of death. There was nothing else like it. It hung in the air at a death scene, so thick and heavy that it was a presence. And though he knew logically that the smell would disappear shortly after the corpses had been removed and the cleaning crew had come through, he believed the memory of it never left, and that every time he returned to the place, the stench would fill his head and turn his stomach. Kovac's second wife had never allowed him into the house wearing the suits he had worn to murder scenes. His corpse clothes, she had called them. He had had to take them off in the garage and leave them there and walk through the house in his underwear to get to the shower. Then, instead of sending the clothes to the cleaners or throwing them into the trash, she would box them up and take them to Goodwill. Like the disadvantaged people of Minneapolis didn't have enough going against them, they had to go around smelling of corpses. After the disappearance of three suits, he had wised up and kept a change of clothes at the station and made friends with the guy who ran the dry cleaners down the street. Liska sighed. "Let's get it over with so I can go home and lie awake all night feeling guilty that I had to question these people." Wayne Haas came to the front door looking like he wanted to hit somebody. He was a raw-boned man with big hands and big shoulders from moving beef carcasses and slabs of meat. Stress and grief and anger had cut such deep lines in his ruddy face that it looked as if it had been carved of redwood.